It is December 4th, 2011, as we record this, and it is time for another Curmudgeon's Corner. I'm Sam Minter, and with me I've got Yvonne Bow. Hello, Yvonne.
Yeah, hello. Hello.
And before we get into anything else, yesterday, was it? Yvonne announced on Facebook a little news he had, so he might want to share here, too. What's up, Yvonne?
Well, simple. Apparently we're having a baby.
Yay! Congratulations, Yvonne.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, the thing is that I was saying is that, you know...
A year from now, when we're doing these shows, you'll have two kids talking to each other in the background.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, you know, I was just... you know, we only really, like... I think what I mentioned to some people earlier, they asked me, well, are you trying to have a kid?
And you actually said on the show you were trying a couple months ago.
The way that I phrased it to people was, look, it's not exactly like I'm, like, timing it and I'm, like, aiming for
it. You're just no longer trying to prevent it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I told somebody, look, I just pretty much basically, you know, I just removed the goalie right now. Okay, all right? You know, there's no goalie there, so if a shot gets through, it's, you know, it's gonna get there. Okay, so that's it, and you know, and it, you know, I guess that my accuracy is pretty good.
There you go.
You know, I was like, you know, because I mean, to be honest, I think really, only even trying, I don't know, less than 9 months. Okay.
Right. Okay.
All right. So you know,
not bad. So, not bad.
And especially since we weren't even, like, timing it, you know? It's not like we were, you know, like, going, oh, it's the boom. No. We went boom, 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 wham. There you go. Done. I was like, okay, good. Well, at least I know that, you know, they got my troops are, you know, got their mission on, and they went. They hit the target, and, you know, so we're on our way. We're on our way. I'm like, you know.
And when's the due date?
I believe it's in July.
July, okay.
Yep.
Excellent.
Nope. Okay, so there we go. So, I mean, that's an easy one to go over. So, all right, so let's dive into our topic for today, shall we? I mean, you know, I'm like over here, I'm like, I got a whole bunch of stuff.
Do you feel prepared? Are you ready? Are you good? Are you ready to be a dad?
Yeah, I'm prepared about that. I just gotta, like, I just wanna, like, you know, I mean, I'm ready to be a dad. Yeah, that's no big deal.
Okay, well...
I mean, you know, look, I'll be as ready as I'll ever be. Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah, that's one of those things about, like, any, like, it's true for, like, when you have a kid, it's true for all kinds of other life decisions. Like, if you wait for the perfect moment, you're never gonna get it. Yeah,
right.
You have to, like, at some point, it's just like, it's you just jump in and do what you are going to do.
Because, yeah, I mean, I'm just as ready as I'll be. I mean, I don't think that there's nothing else that I could really, like, change significantly at this moment to make it, like, you know, be more easier, better, whatever. You understand what I'm saying? So...
Absolutely, and you know there are people you hear going, well, you know, I want to do that, but right now it's not a good time, you know, blah blah blah, this, that, the other.
Well, I mean, I said that many times before myself.
Don't get me wrong, sometimes that is absolutely true. You just can't, like, say that forever.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I have a friend of mine who wound up being, like, unemployed, for example, and they had one baby, and then all of a sudden now they got a second one on the way. You know, I mean, that's, I can understand that, how that's, you know, not good timing. Yeah, that's definitely not good timing, you know?
Right.
I mean, yeah, I can understand that. But, you know, hey, you know, I got a job, you know, we're all right. I mean, you know, my wife could have another job if she wanted to right now. She just doesn't have one because she didn't want to. So, I mean, you know, we'll be fine. I mean, you know, we'll be all right. So
congratulations, Yvonne. And like you said, I guess we jump into the rest of the show.
Yep.
So first on our agenda is the good old Republicans. Once again, we got a bunch of action this week. I'll start off like I have the last few weeks with the Real Clear Politics summary poll of polls for the national polls on the Republican presidential nomination. And of course, I want to give the caveat whenever I give this, you know, the nomination isn't based on national polls. It's based on individual state primaries and caucuses and the way things are scheduled and run. You know, the first few states have a lot more impact than later states. So it's not actually like completely fair looking at the national numbers, but you know, they're still cool numbers to look at. So we've got Gingrich increasing his lead even further. So, hi, Alex.
Ooh, but he'll collapse. Gingrich gets the nomination. The Democrats are going to be having a fucking, like, I mean, they'll be, like, you know, firing, like, fireworks in the air. I mean, it's like a fucking dream come true.
Well, you know, number of people have pointed out how. What are you doing? Oh, it's a tambourine.
Okay.
That Gingrich has just so many self-destructive tendencies. It's just a question of which one will blow him up first.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so like, you know, a couple weeks ago, I gave him a couple weeks. Okay, he's exceeded my expectations, you know, and he's sticking around. And we're getting so close to Iowa now. Like, you know, he might pull something out. But let me read these numbers real quick. Gingrich, 26.6. Romney, 20.4. Kane, 14. Paul, 8. Perry, 7.2, Bachman, 4.6, Santorum, 2.6, Huntsman, 2.4. One interesting thing I wanna say on that is 538, who's the pollster who's now works for the New York Times, posted, I think it was actually just on Twitter, a couple days ago on the 1st, a note that what these polls really look like, all of these polls of polls and stuff are telling you the opinions of people who actually have made up their minds already. Okay. If you actually include undecided as an option, it's more like Gingrich 13, Romney 10, Paul 5, Kane 5, Perry 3, Bachman 2, Huntsman 1, Santorum 1, undecided 60%.
6-0.
Yes.
Wow. Wow, that just shows you how dissatisfied the average Republican is with the field.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just stunning, especially when we are so close to one of the first primaries. I mean, I would think if I were to go back to, say, the previous election and say the Democratic field, I mean, I'm sure that it was nowhere nearly that number. I would say that there's probably like 20% of people that maybe were undecided, but certainly not 60.
Wow. Yeah. And that just tells you, I mean, this is why. Yes, I'm giving you a hug. See, you're going to have this soon, Yvonne.
No, I'm going to have my wife, like, stay with the kid during the program, dude.
You know, look, we try. You know, he runs away from her and comes and finds me.
Okay, all right. Well, I have two doors that I can lock between here and there, so
he knows how to open the doors.
Okay, it won't be.
It'll be a while.
It'll be a while.
So okay. Anyway, so yeah, the undecided percentage is amazingly high, and that adds to like all the we've been seeing all this volatility and people going up and down and sideways, and hey, this is a big part of that. I mean. And it also just shows how volatile things are. I mean, like, before these people actually vote, they have to make up their minds.
Wow.
You know? And so who knows where that'll go? I've also, another interesting thing I've seen in recent days is there have been a few Iowa polls. You know, the race for number one right now is actually between Gingrich and Ron Paul. Romney is a distant third.
Oh, God. I mean, what in God's... Well, yeah, well, when you got 60% undecided, I guess that's what you wind up with, I guess. Jesus. I mean, okay. Well, well, and then Bachman was. I heard Bachman this week say that I have a I what the hell was it? Oh yeah, I have my choices for VP. I mean, is this woman this deluded that she's talking about who she would have as her running mate? So she mentioned Donald Trump, Marco Rubio.
Who, by the way, Donald Trump will be hosting a Republican debate soon with him as the moderator.
Well, that's great. That's a good opportunity for him to get his hair redone. But, you know, who the hell was it? I mean, the four people were so different, okay, that it just seemed like, you know, I don't know, like she picked like 1-800 yellow pages in order to fucking pick them. I mean, I was just like, I mean, you know how somebody, when you hear people like think of VP candidates, like they follow certain ideological lines, okay? All right? You know, you think about certain people. And it just seemed to me that, you know, I don't know, she just picked people out of like a fucking like popularity survey or something. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, remember, she also said that in response to this week's events in Iran, where they stormed the British embassy, that she would close the American embassy in Iran.
Which, oh, that's great!
Which, of course, for anyone listening who doesn't know, we closed the American embassy in Iran in 1979... when the students took it over then, and we have never reopened an embassy in Iran. Later, one of her advisors, you know,
kicked her like, you stupid bitch!
No, clarified that what she meant was, theoretically, if we still had an embassy, we would close it.
Oh, that's what she meant. Oh, I see. Ah, oh, well, okay. All right. Well, that's great to know.
And we also had Kane threw in the towel. Go ahead.
Did he?
Did he what?
Well, you said Kane threw in the towel. Of course, he said he was suspending his campaign.
No. So here's the difference. I've read in a number of cases, this is a legal distinction. Suspending rather than quitting lets you continue to spend money that you've raised. It lets you continue to raise money. It lets you continue to spend that money. There are some restrictions on what you can do. But if you actually end your campaign
You have to return the donations?
Something like that. I don't know all the specifics, but basically the difference between ending a campaign and suspending a campaign is due to the campaign finance laws in terms of how you can raise money and how you can spend money.
Okay.
So that's why he suspended it. Now, it also theoretically does leave you the option of jumping back in later if everybody else falls apart.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, no one thinks that's what's going on in this case, but it does leave that option potentially open.
Okay, well, anyway, so Kane finally, you know, saw, I guess, he said something about, didn't he say something at some point about talking to his wife?
Yeah, he was going to talk to his wife.
Okay, so he went to talk to his wife, and I'm assuming that the conversation went something like, you cheap motherfucker, how many bitches did you really fuck? I mean, really?
You know, and look, here's the thing, and a number of people have commented on this. This isn't original for me. But look, this is a guy. Okay, he finally drops out of the race because somebody accuses him of a consensual affair that he had over a number of years. This is after, you know, it didn't even faze him or apparently the voters that he was sexually harassing everybody around him and in some cases potentially sexually assaulting them, according to some of the accusations.
Correct.
They are just accusations, of course. We don't know what really happened. And not to mention the fact that, you know, he's like, who cares if I know the president of Ubeka Steki Steki Stan Stan Stan? You know, and basically a complete and total ignorance of every issue that is potentially on the table of the president, almost without fail. I can't point to a single one where I'm like, oh yeah, you know, Kane knows what he's talking about that one.
Well, but that obviously hadn't stopped anybody else from becoming president. I mean,
I guess not.
I mean, we had Bush. I mean, you know, he certainly didn't know shit about any of the subjects either. So, I don't know. Not that that would disqualify anybody.
I guess not. You know? But he's out now. And you know, it's somewhat a shame because he was quite amusing.
Yeah, I know. At least we got some entertainment value out of the whole thing. And now,
I mean, Gingrich is certainly going to provide some amusement down the line. I can't wait to hear what comes out of his mouth next. We still got Bachman. We still got Santorum. Sometimes makes a funny.
Yeah, Santorum every once in a while comes up and says something, you know, Santorum-esque, I guess. You know. Whatever the hell that idiot's
so,
got to say.
The one thing, you know, we started out talking a little bit about this, but let's go back to it a little bit before we kill the segment. You know, with Gingrich where he is on the polls, and given the very small amount of time left before Iowa, and, you know, people are starting to say, you know, we all believe Gingrich will implode at some point.
Right.
But we're close enough now. Is he going to, like, actually... If we make it to Iowa before he implodes, he might have a good shot at this nomination.
Well, the one thing is, the question is when he implodes. I mean, it's not a question of if; it's just a question of when. Let's face it; he could maybe make it like very far, even to the nomination, and then just, you know, colossally just, you know, self-destruct. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
and you know, last week I was saying things about President Gingrich. I mean, let's not forget, like, you know, if the economy completely goes south, and we'll talk about the economy later on in the show some, but if the economy completely implodes and, you know, we're in a really bad shape, then, you know, a trained monkey could probably beat Obama, and that includes Gingrich.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't look like that's what's happening. I mean, you know, so... You know, what's looking like it's happening, I mean, it's okay, you know, but it's not going to be a, you know, it's okay. That's about as best as it is right now. So, but
yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's muddling along. So, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, I see a lot of people, though, saying don't count Gingrich out yet. You know, I mean... But they're also, you know, again, and this is like the news junkies, you know, fantasy here, but we've also got all kinds of scenarios lining up that may lead to, you know, not making an early decision on this nomination. I mean, you know, Ron Paul, according to the latest polls, has a shot of winning Iowa.
Bring back the smoke-filled rooms, baby! That was a slogan I saw in an article sometime early this
week. I mean, if Ron Paul wins Iowa,
right,
and Romney comes in third,
right,
that's like pretty bad for Romney. Now, nobody thinks that the end result of that is a Ron Paul surge and then he'll win the Republican nomination. He seems to have a fairly low ceiling in the overall Republican Party. However, it would throw things more into chaos. And then we have, you know, in New Hampshire, Romney's still ahead, but Gingrich is coming up fast. So a split decision coming out of New Hampshire and Iowa is very likely. Then we start looking at South Carolina and Florida. And we're talking about your state. I saw one of the polls in Florida had like... Gingrich up by like 20% over Romney. Something huge.
Oh, God.
You Florida Republicans, you know. Gingrich here. But basically, the first few states are looking like they may not have a decisive verdict coming out of them, which could lead to further chaos down the line. And if you look at the way the Republicans have spread out their delegates this year, it is much more spread out. Like, last time around, by the time we got to Super Tuesday, most of the delegates had been allocated. This time it stretches out longer. So we'll see. I'm, as always, rooting for chaos here, but we'll see how it goes. I still think Romney has a little bit of an edge, but...
Chaos! But, Captain Chaos! Yeah! Okay.
But right. But Romney's been falling down a little bit, letting himself get testy. He had an interview on Fox, of all places, that didn't go all that well, and then afterwards, he apparently bitched about the reporter asking questions that weren't fair, whereas everybody seems to agree they were perfectly fair questions. So... he's getting himself flustered. You know, Gingrich might be getting under his skin.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it'll be quite an interesting thing.
Okay, time for a break. Let's take a break, and we'll be back, and then we'll talk all about the economy. We got all kinds of economic things going on. We got American Airlines going bankrupt. We got the central banks bailing out Europe. We've got unemployment. We've got other things. Oh, and for the segment after that, I'm going to talk a little bit about carrier IQ and other data collection and spying things going on. Anyway, break. Here comes the break. And here we are again. So, Yvonne.
Yeah.
You know, does Europe look better than it did in the last few weeks?
I don't know. I think, you know, not particularly. I just think that what happened was that a lot of central banks basically just flooded the market with money in order to make sure that there was a liquidity crisis. And everybody, seemed to relax and just say, well, you know, if you've got the Swiss central bank, the European central bank, the English central bank, the U.S. central bank, Japanese, and everybody just fucking flooding the market with money, well, then it probably, you know, not going to be a concern that this whole thing is just going to turn into a financial gridlock where banks and people can't go get money.
So now let me ask this. This is what central banks are for, right?
Yes,
So why the fuck did they let us go through months of hand-wringing?
Because the problem is that the European Central Bank, because almost every central bank acts like that, except
the Europeans. Yes.
Exactly. Because the European Central Bank, because like I've said before, there's not full union, there isn't, it's like, they were not doing that. I mean, it wound up being the U.S. Federal Reserve having to go in and, at first and fucking going and us starting to buy fucking euro debt.
So the reason why all these other banks wouldn't have acted earlier is they were like, for God's sake, take care of your own business.
Right.
And finally
they got together and finally able to convince the European Central Bank to do a consolidated action instead of the separate banks just doing something. Okay.
And the European Central Bank is also it's not just tradition, right? They're actually limited by their charter somewhat.
Exactly. That's the problem. And so that's why they've got to do something where they change the charter and the rules.
I think the main thing, right, is they can't actually loan to governments. They can only loan to banks, right?
Yes. And there are restrictions on the Fed, for example, can do open market operations. They can go out in the market and just buy fucking debt, you know? And just put it on their balance sheet, and there's a whole bunch of restrictions on the European Central Bank doing that, okay? And, you know, which somebody said, just fuck it. Just have the ECB go out and buy fucking debt from Italy and Greece, and fuck it. And that's it. Problem solved. But, I don't know, they've been, arguing about it because of how, the rules, how the bank has been set up. But I don't know. This week, I guess
people were talking about a number of ways around that. You could charter a bank a brand new bank specifically for the purpose of loaning to the governments,
sure,
and then have the ECB loan to that bank.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You could do a whole bunch of things. But the one thing is that the Germans have been like, oh, hemming and hawing and like stopping it. And, like, the problem is you got so many governments and so many people all involved at the same time and so many people complaining that it's basically become like that they haven't done what they should be doing. So I don't know. We'll see. There's a whole bunch of meetings this week regarding this in Europe, regarding doing some further integration and to do some changes in the rules regarding how the central bank operates and other stuff. And, when is the summit? The European European policymakers hold the key to their euro's direction next week. Whether it rises or falls depends on the outcome of a meeting of leaders to address the debt crisis at an ECB decision on interest rates. But let me see. What is the date of this? Let me see when they're meeting. Well, it's sometime next week. It doesn't say here exactly, but sometime next week they're supposed to be. So we'll see if that provides any additional clarity. But right now, at least, the banks are just, everybody's just fucking putting money in the market just to make sure that that nothing bad happens. So we'll just see if what the markets continue. However, on a positive note, I don't know, the U.S. economy did report that the unemployment rate dropped about to 8.6%, and then there was a significantly nice number of new jobs created in November. Now, let me caveat this. I don't know what effect they took in the seasonality, because as usual, there is a seasonal surge in employment because of the holidays.
Right.
Okay.
I presume these are seasonally adjusted numbers, right?
Usually they are. I just want to make sure that the fact that we get a whole bunch of these temporary jobs are created due to the holidays doesn't mean that. But it looks like a good positive uptick, a significant one in terms of the U.S. economy. That was the positive note. On the negative note,
the other thing I've heard mentioned just a lot of times when looking at employment statistics and such, that you also really need to keep in mind, if you look at like job creation numbers or whatever, is just in order to keep up with population growth, there needs to be like 70,000 new jobs a month or something.
That's
like
right.
That.
Yeah, correct.
So,
right.
So like if you see like 30,000 new jobs created or whatever, well, that's nice, but you're actually not keeping up with the number of new people reaching employment age each month.
Right. And let me put a caveat. Half of the drop, okay, it was a drop. There's no doubt about it. One thing they're saying is that half of the drop came from people that just decided that we're not looking for work anymore.
Right. And so that's, of course, also one of the important things. And because there's another broader measure that includes those people.
That's correct.
But I'm not sure if we saw a stat on that number this time around.
Yeah, I mean, it's the difference. Like, say, for example, my wife, for example, is not working right now, right?
Right.
But you would not count her as unemployed.
Because she's not looking.
So that's...
Well, there's also a significant difference between the people who aren't looking because they don't want to be looking and the people who aren't looking because they gave up.
They're discouraged, right, correct. So that's the one thing. I mean, it's just, so that's why it's not the easiest measure to look at.
Another measure that people have looked at is, just the simple straight up number of employed people divided by the population.
Right.
And that's a much broader measure. And so, for instance, that you got to be careful reading all these statistics, because like some of those, like, for instance, if you look at that one, well, if more people decide they want to go to work, you can get a rise or a drop or whatever. There are all kinds of mixed factors in here. So you have to be careful interpreting. That's all I'm saying.
Well, plus if you have an aging population, for example, you got a number of people heading into retirement, for example,
yeah,
that measure then starts getting wacky because, you got a whole bunch of people. You may have a population that starts with more people really, not wanting to, not doing that. So,
right.
It's just tricky. It's tricky. So, but yeah, 120,000 additional jobs apparently were added, so that's a good thing. So, okay. I don't know. Moving on a little bit on this, I don't know if we want to, like,
American?
Yeah, so that is, like, I was looking at, it's one of the, because of the assets of an airline, okay, it is one of the largest bankruptcies ever that American Airlines filed for. However, you know, somebody mentioned, you know, 30 years ago, like, there's an airline called Braniff, okay? I don't know if you ever called here.
I vaguely remember the name.
Yeah, so Braniff was for a little while, you know, one of the largest airlines in the United States, and they went and they filed for bankruptcy. But you know, when they filed for bankruptcy, dude, I mean, it was like the day that they filed, all the planes stopped flying. I mean, it was just, you know, whatever. Everybody got stranded. Nobody got a refund, et cetera, so forth. Whatever. We've had every major airline in the United States right now, the top five, file for bankruptcy in the last 10 years. Nothing of the sort has happened, okay? Because, you know, in the last 20 years, let's see, United, Delta, Northwest, who am I missing? Continental, U.S. Airways, America West, all of them filed for bankruptcy. None stopped flying, okay? So it's a very different thing. I mean, it barely registered a blip. I think the main thing about why they filed for bankruptcy is basically because everybody else had. They were the only airline that had not filed for bankruptcy, and they had spent quite a lot of time basically trying to negotiate with everybody in general to try to reduce their expenses to get to a level that they're. Other airlines that were bankrupt had. But, you know, it's impossible. I mean, when all those people were able to shed billions and billions worth of debt, basically just, you know, by shedding it in bankruptcy, and you didn't, and you're trying to operate a competitive airline versus everybody that had such advantages, it just, you know, the board just finally decided that it was just impossible to do. And they just decided that it was, you know, that it was in their best interest to file for bankruptcy. I know that the CEO did not agree with that. He had been fighting tooth and nail not to do that because he felt a lot of groups would bet employees and other people would be harmed by that. But, you know, even at that, I mean, he had been negotiating. He had offered their pilots a pay increase over the next few years if they basically just did it in return for additional productivity, and they turned it down. And so it became to a point where it was just like, I mean, I can't do this anymore, you know, and he resigned. He said that even though he was begged to stay on, he said, you know what, fuck this. I've been doing this for 8 years. I'm just burnt out. It's just too much. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. And by the way, one of the things that's significant about this, you know, every CEO you hear, oh, they left and they took this golden parachute, whatever. No severance, not a dime. The guy walked out. I think the only money he had a whole bunch of stock in American Airlines. And well, forget it. That's toast. He had about $3 or $4 million in his pension plan. Well, shit, he had $3 or $4 million basically because he worked at the fucking company for 30 years. So, but yeah, he took he walked away with no severance. I mean, even a whole bunch of these other CEOs for when the airlines went bankrupt the last 10 years. I mean, I can't remember. He walked away with $10 million, $20 million, $30 million severances. So it's just – it's a little bit sad. I mean, you know, the fact that we can't operate a fucking airline in this country without it being bankrupt, I guess. That's what I feel. But, you know, it is what it is.
Now, just given the rest of the world, I mean, is it possible to run an airline in a way that is both, you know, self-sustaining and profitable and, you know, isn't completely crap for the people riding the planes?
Well, there is one airline in the U.S. that has managed to do that consistently that never went bankrupt. The only one.
Southwest.
Yes. So the biggest difference between Southwest and all the other carriers is that they have a union. And actually, Southwest employees, by the way, are amongst the highest paid in the industry.
Are they also all given stock, so they're all owners, employees?
They do have some profit sharing and whatnot, but I think the main thing is just that their work rules as a workplace, they don't have all these restrictive work rules that most of the other legacy carriers have, okay? They get a lot more productivity per employee, okay? a lot more productivity per plane, a lot more productivity for every asset that's invested. Because if you think about it, an airline, for example, why does American Airlines have $25 billion in assets? Well, because that's how much they need in order to be able to run the business and generate revenue. However, Southwest generates the same revenue, you know, with less than half the assets. You know, that's the and that's the key. They are able to turn to, you know, they get more revenue out of every plane, more revenue out of every crew, more revenue out of every dollar that they spend as an expense. They get a lot more revenue. And that's the key. And if you can't do that, then it's just, you know, it's just not possible. And Southwest is, you know, the funny thing is Southwest has shown everybody what it is that you need to do in order to do it. But yet,
I mean, is a lot of that that the employees actually get paid less?
No, Southwest employees get paid more.
Ah, okay.
That's the thing. They get paid more. They just, it's just that for every dollar they get paid, you get a lot more revenue. Their revenue per employee is higher, basically. That's it. You know? So if you can get more money out of that, you know, out of every employee, then, you know, whatever, you can pay them more.
So the employees work their asses off?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But they get paid more money.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. Well.
Well, okay, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about Carrier IQ and the Spy Files.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we are back. And so this next issue is basically around the fact that, you know, hey, everybody and their mother is carrying smartphones around now. And guess what? Smartphones have lots and lots and lots of information on them. It's every once in a while we've had these like little blow-ups where something or other is getting saved, logged, whatever. The last one, if you remember, big one that I remember anyway, was when Apple, turns out, it had this location history file that you could run a little program and get a nice little map of everywhere you'd been in the last, you know, however long. And the answer was, of course, oh, oops, this is diagnostic data intended to, you know, keep track of what cell towers are being used in order to help improve the network, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we accidentally made it so it never deleted this information, whereas it was supposed to only be kept for a few days or whatnot. So that blew up and went away. This week's version of that is Carrier IQ.
I must admit that I saw a whole bunch of noise about it, but I have not read what's the story. So
basically, there was a researcher who discovered that this Carrier IQ software was running on a variety of phones, almost any Android phone you could buy, but also on iPhones.
Okay.
And installed by the carriers. So it's not something installed by the manufacturers, apparently, although obviously they have to cooperate. But it was something chosen to be installed by the carriers, and it takes a slightly different form on each phone in terms of exactly what it's doing. But the initial researcher put out a bunch of really bold claims saying that, look, this software is logging pretty much everything. It's logging what phone calls you do. It's logging your text messages. It's logging what apps you use and how long you use them. All kinds of stuff. With the notion, of course, that it's reporting this data back. And so people started flipping out about this and noting that, you know, listing all the phones it was on, you know, all the phone manufacturers started coming out with statements saying it's not our fault, it's the carriers. Apple actually came out with a statement saying we removed this from almost all of our phones in iOS 5. We will be removing it from the rest of our devices with the next update, or with an update soon, I think was the word. And one other difference in iOS, It was off by default, and it could be turned on and off by a menu setting. On the Android phones, it was on by default, and there was no way to turn it off. Now, as the week has progressed, the company has defended itself somewhat, and some researchers have looked more into it. And it appears that what's really going on is that this program, this Carrier IQ software, does have access to all of the stuff that has been being discussed. However, it only sends a small subset of that information actually back to the carrier for permanent storage. Now, it's unclear, apparently, what gets sent back and how it's used is really dependent on the carrier. And the carriers all say that this is, you know, again, information to help improve the experience, improve the networking, understand when calls are dropped.
Let me ask a question. Say for look, but here's one thing about this. I mean, if I'm connected through, say, whatever, I got AT&T, right?
Yep.
Look, I type in a fucking URL on my phone.
Guess what? It goes through AT&T.
Exactly. I mean, don't they already know this?
Yes.
I mean, what the fuck?
Well, this provides apparently a decent amount more detail, but yes, all of this stuff, of course, it goes through the carrier.
Yeah, so I'm trying to understand what the fuck the big brouhaha is. Let's face it, they get all the traffic that's going through my phone, everything, all of it.
Yeah. As long as you're going through their network, like going through Wi-Fi, you don't, and in this
that's
case,
right.
You'd get that as well.
Right. Oh, okay. Okay, so maybe they could get the shit that I do through Wi-Fi. But honestly, most of the time, I'm going through the network.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to understand.
Here's the fundamental question. Yes, all text messages have to go through your carrier by definition. Also, by the way, I should point out to folks, text messages go over the air in the clear. Not encrypted, so like people with the right technology can listen into them anyway. But whatever. If you remember, there was someone who actually released an archive of text messages sent on 9/11 in the New York area because they just turned on a sniffer and recorded everything. But I think what people are worried about here is more that it's individualized and tied to your account in a way that somebody could potentially search and say, you know, show me all of Sam's messages.
I'm reading here somebody that you and I...
Declan's article?
Yep.
So this is Declan McCullough and CNET. I'm guessing you're looking at Carrier IQ verbatim answers from company execs?
Yeah, he's talking about...
I have that open on my screen as well.
Three of the main complaints we hear from mobile users are drop calls, poor customer service, and having to constantly recharge the device. Our software allows operators to figure out why problems are occurring, why calls are dropped, and how to extend the life of the battery. When a user calls to complain about a problem, our software helps operators' customer service more quickly identify the specific issue with a phone, the statement said. I mean, I can understand, like, for example, because URLs and that kind of stuff, obviously they get, but what they couldn't get from the phone, for example, is to figure out how much of my battery was charged, how quickly did it discharge. When a call was dropped, for example, they know a call was dropped on their end, but, for example, they wouldn't know how much signal I was reading on my phone, for example, unless, you know, they have something that could figure that out. Or they wouldn't know how many calls I actually tried to pull through that never actually went through for some reason. I guess, but I don't know. They can get the fucking carriers can get all this shit anyway. It all goes through them.
Well, there is more here. You know, like they're talking about how, you know, dynamically changing your settings on your phone to do various things. On recording the use of certain applications if an application is causing problems. Yeah, here's the bottom line. It looks like here there was a lot of paranoia at first on Carrier IQ because it has the capability of collecting, storing, and sending back all kinds of information. It looks like in this particular case, they really are relatively constrained in what they send back and what they use and in terms of using it for... let's call them benign purposes.
Right.
However, the larger issue that exists with these kinds of things, and this is not specific to carrier IQ, but just to the notion of having these kinds of devices in general, and is just how much information does exist on these phones, and how, you know, how relatively easy, you know, people sort of assume, I make a very bad assumption, which is, this is my phone, therefore what's on it is completely private. And the reality is, just like anything else in the internet, cloud-based, whatever, blah, 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 if it's going through the network, then it's going through all kinds of other hands. And you've got various companies who are going to be potentially looking at it for, it may be very good benign purposes in terms of, you know, helping make the network better, troubleshooting problems, whatever, but it doesn't change the fact that there are a bunch of these people and groups in between that do have access to it when it's needed, and, let me add, will potentially provide that information to, quote-unquote, the authorities if they are asked about it. And, you know, with some of the things that have been changing, more and more often without even a warrant, just, you know, please give it to me. You don't always have to have the judge involved saying, yes, there's probable cause, go ahead. And so you have the larger issue here, and that brings us to the next thing that I had on the agenda for this segment, which is the spy files, which were released by WikiLeaks this week. Which come to this direct issue, which is basically that we're not just talking about smartphones, but just anything that goes through the network in general. So you've got phone calls, you've got your regular internet traffic, you've got this, you've got that, you've got whatever. And it is just very easy to, at the centralized physical locations where all this traffic goes through, to, well, monitor it and do things with it. And so basically, this batch of files that they're releasing is just talking about how widespread this really is. There are a number of Western companies that produce software and systems for the express purpose of monitoring huge volumes of communications, archiving it, and providing mechanisms to search it and do other things with it. And these are mostly sold to governments. But, you know, in addition to, I hesitate to separate governments out into good governments and bad governments, because I kind of feel like this behavior is bad no matter who's doing it. But they're, you know, so let me read a little bit from their news release just to... get it. Today, WikiLeaks began releasing a database of hundreds of documents from as many as 160 intelligence contractors in the mass surveillance industry, working with Bugged Planet and Privacy International, as well as media organizations from six countries, international surveillance companies are based in the more technologically sophisticated countries. They sell their technology onto every country of the world. The industry is in practice unregulated. Intelligence agencies, military forces, and police authorities are able to silently, en masse, secretly intercept calls, take over computers without the help or knowledge of the telecommunication providers. Users' physical location can be tracked if they are carrying a mobile phone, even if it's on standby. But it's about more... I'm sort of paraphrasing and jumping through this. Are more than about good Western countries exporting to bad developing world countries. Western companies are also selling a vast range of mass surveillance intelligence to Western intelligence agencies. In traditional spy stories, intelligence agencies like MI5 bug the phone of one or two people of interest. In the last 10 years, systems for indiscriminate mass surveillance have become the norm. Intelligence companies such as Vastech secretly sell equipment to permanently record the phone calls of entire nations. Others record the location of every mobile phone in a city down to 50 meters.
But here's the one thing. But here's the one thing about something like this. Okay.
Yep.
All right. You know, like I've said, I've said this to, like, you know, like in business, for example. I mean, that all sounds great. Okay. The only thing about it is, I mean, I'm saying it facetiously in the sense that, well, fuck. Okay, great. Every conversation to everybody in a fucking country. Who the fuck has the time to be able to analyze through all this shit to get anything actually meaningful?
Well, no. There are two things on that. One, and I heard someone talking about comparing this to what was done decades ago by the FBI and such. In many cases, look, the idea isn't to go through it all in real time. The idea is to create a searchable database that you can go through looking for specific things later. So for instance, with voice recognition technology, you can potentially go in and say, give me all the phone calls where somebody mentioned X.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You can also do things like somebody...
But even still, man, I mean...
Look, here's another example. Somebody, you're in some country and somebody is suddenly in a political opposition, suddenly is getting traction and is dangerous to you. Well, you go look up all his files looking for dirt. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that's scary here. And look, the problem with all this stuff is, look, this is almost an unavoidable byproduct of the fact that the technology exists. I mean, this information is out. But, you know, it's a question of how people use it. And I think in a lot of these cases, this mention is completely unregulated. And look, you know, I'm not a big regulation fan. But on the other hand, there's a lot here that, you know, I think if people were widely aware, they would be less comfortable than they are using a lot of this technology. And I think that, and the fact that it's governments doesn't make me feel any better.
Yeah, I don't get
it.
The warm and fuzzies. I gotcha. I mean, you know, so.
This kind of stuff means that just generally, you know, on the one hand, let's do the positive law enforcement thing. You find a suspect that you think is like going to do some terrorist act. Well, you go into this database and boom, there's the last year of his email. You already have it. You've got his phone calls. You've got his stuff. You don't have to go and like put a tracer on and start tracking him from that point forward. Boom, you've got his complete history.
But like everything, there should be legal protections to all this stuff. So people, I mean, you know, this is the thing that's scary. I mean, you know, when people don't, you know, when we don't enforce the legal protections that we used to enforce on this kind of stuff before, just because people can gather it doesn't mean that anybody, you know, you don't want people to just be sniffing through it just for fun, I guess is my point.
Well, like I said, the downside is all of these other things where, you know, somebody in power abuses this and uses it to go after their enemies.
J. Edgar Hoover had the power to do a whole bunch of shit and he abused it out the shit out of it. I mean, can you imagine him with this shit?
Well, screw going back that far. Imagine Dick Cheney with this.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Or you know, for that matter, given what they've been doing lately, imagine Obama with this.
Yeah.
You know, there's some things where you want to make damn sure that, you know, that if you are going to have the power at all, which, you know, arguably in some cases, it's better to just say we could do this, but we won't.
But if you are going to have
the power at all, you need to have all kinds of checks and balances and restrictions and openness and blah, blah, blah.
I got the solution for this. The solution is very simple. You go and, like, you go move to Pakistan like Bin Laden, and you live in a place where you only get information on USB stick, okay, and with no phone lines or no internet to it, and you only get satellite TV incoming. And that's it.
Carrier pigeons.
Yep. That's it.
That's fundamentally the problem here. I mean, like, you can't have a lot of this enabling technology without potentially opening the door to all of this kind of stuff on the back end. Right. And yet, and like, right now, there are almost no restrictions whatsoever on it anyway. So, of course, people are abusing it. And, you know, you can be damn sure, like, the Syrians and people are like that are using it to repress their people and kill people and things like that. But more to the point, I am 99.9999% sure that, you know, the American government is abusing this, too, and using it in ways that I wouldn't approve of. You know, and so, like I said, it's like there's some technologies where maybe you want to decide not to do it at all. But if you do decide to use it, you should be damn sure that there's all kinds of checks and balances and restrictions. And I'd say openness, too. Like, you know, 2 years after the fact, you have to, publish the fact that you monitor a certain thing or whatever. I don't know what the right thing is, but the problem, and a lot of this is made worse by the fact that it's kept secret. And so, people don't know what that this is going on. You know, in the old days, if somebody wanted to look through your stuff, they had to get a warrant and they had to present it to you and they had to then go through your stuff, you know, and you would have a chance to defend yourself. You would have a chance to fight the warrant before it, all kinds of things. And not always, of course, because there was always surprises and you don't want people destroying evidence, blah, blah, blah. I know. But it seems like we're going way down in the other direction where all kinds of surveillance happens without people having any idea it's going on and without very many layers of process to make sure that it's only used when it absolutely has to be used and there's really good cause. Instead, it's seeming like it's very indiscriminate.
Okay, well, I think that we all agree that this sucks, and, you know, I don't know, who knows what the hell the governments are going to do. The governments have been so fucking, like, I mean, let's face it, SOPA, Patriot Act, all of this shit. I mean, all these fucking people keep passing
and,
shit.
And the Military Reauthorization Act that is going through right now as well is also doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not too hopeful on any of this shit right now, so.
Yeah, so anyway, we've only had three segments today, but I think we'll wrap it up pretty quickly. Only other thing I wanted to mention real quick is this week has also seen quite a few efforts by police departments across the country to shut down these Occupy protests in various places. I did a post on my blog about it if you want to read my my thoughts about that more. Let's see, when did I post that? It was on Wednesday, November 30th, I posted that. And we've talked about it here before, and I'm sure we will again. But it's all discouraging to me. All this kind of stuff we're talking about, because it's anyway. That's a show.
All right, that's a show.
thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Tell your friends to listen, too. And by tell your friends, by the way, I don't just mean tell your friends. I mean, you know, retweet things, blog about us, post us on Facebook. You know, all of these kinds of things. You know, it's the
anything,
modern era. You know?
Anything.
Tell your friends to listen and send us comments. And I'm glad you're listening. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.